Playing God, Commentary for the February 6, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day, with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land desolate and destroy the sinners within it. The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. Isaiah 13, verses 9 and 10. In Isaiah's day, he lived in a time of national transition, where his country was being destroyed from treachery within and military failures without. Isaiah foretold that this would lead to the destruction of Jerusalem and captivity for its people. He said that the enemy that brought this about would themselves eventually be destroyed. But the prophets foretold that they would not see this for at least 70 years. The kings and many of the people felt that their fate was in their hands to decide and rejected the words of the prophets, greatly abusing or murdering them for their temerity to oppose the will of the king and the nobles. Even when they came to a prophet and asked for the Lord's will in a matter, they refused to obey that will when the prophet shared it with them, if it differed from their own desires. They appeared possessed of a spirit of rebellion against God that they could not shake. It clouded the judgment of nobles and priests alike. One would think that those who served in the temple would be able to clearly recognize the voice of God, but that was not the case. Instead, they accused God's righteous prophets of conspiring against the country and demanded their death, hiding the fact that they were following their own vain imaginations and were themselves conspiring for power and gain, without regard for the consequences, as they brought the nation to its knees around them. Selfishness and greed were the order of the day, and that allowed no room for a God who would restrain any of that. Since his prophets spoke his will in opposition, they had to go, even if it meant making an example by sawing Isaiah in two to silence him. We live in a similar time of transition. Scenes that have played out in many countries before are now playing out in the United States. A lust for power and wealth has continued to enrich those in power to obscene levels and impoverished average Americans, pushing them to homelessness, food insecurity, and a sense of helplessness in the face of disease and continually rising costs. Despite those rising costs, the federal minimum wage has not changed since 2009, and the United States Senate has refused to provide meaningful relief for wages or pandemic needs. The wealthy claim that they cannot afford to pay higher wages to their employees, as they have complained ever since the minimum wage began. They lament that doing so would be the downfall of the economy, even though that has never been the case at any time when the minimum wage was raised. In the past, the social welfare system has been a safety net that families could turn to, but it has been more than that for society at large. Empty stomachs and homeless transients are fertile soil for revolution, as Marie Antoinette and her husband Louis found out. Desperate people only await a modern Madame Defarge to egg them on. As we have seen, there are plenty such souls in the United States willing to do just that, manipulating anxious people with unfounded theories of horrendous conspiracies. They push them on, lighting them afire with fear that no one will care for them, so they must take matters into their own hands. People who would otherwise trust in the social safety net are squeezed between those who would defund that net and those who brand the users of that safety net as socialists and communists out to destroy the country. A moment's careful thought would cause a normal person to ask, why are people urging this? What's in it for them? But desperation, worsened by a deadly pandemic, sometimes prevents those quiet moments from happening. Instead, those moments are replaced with conspiracy propaganda constantly being hammered home by social media and some well-placed individuals capable of building a following by pandering to fear. Some of these individuals, like the sycophants of tyrants of the past, are likely hoping to profit from the chaos and rise to greater power and wealth under those they set upon the throne. But their greed and selfishness betray them in the end. Were they to study the lessons of the past, they would predict, or could predict, their own future. The Roman Republic, a representative form of democracy, survived for almost 500 years until Julius Caesar dealt it a mortal wound. He paid for that wound with his own assassination, and the Republic limped on for another 17 years before it finally expired with the declaration of Octavian as emperor. But as happens so often with dictators, many of the Caesars met a violent end. We see this same trend in the Bible with the kings of the northern kingdom of Israel as usurpers, one after another, brought down kings and replaced them, often eliminating not only those they usurped, but their entire families. The weakness this creates within a nation eventually sets it up for destruction by foreign enemies. We have seen this with the Assyrians destroying Samaria and the Babylonians destroying Jerusalem, a city split between worshiping the true God or the gods of other nations. Even the Babylonians fell before the Medes and the Persians, in part because of a conflict between Nabonidus and his son Belshazzar and the Babylonian priesthood. The king and his son wanted to have only one deity. This might not have caused a serious rift, except they wanted the deity to be Sin, but the Babylonian priests wanted it to be Marduk. As a result, when Cyrus rode into Babylon, he styled himself champion of Marduk and won the hearts of the priests and the people. Divisions, especially those with a religious foundation, can destroy an empire, but they can also destroy those who rise from the ashes of that destruction. The flames of that conflagration licked at the capital, sometimes called the People's House, in a thus far vain attempt to overthrow our republic. This conflict, too, was fanned by the flames of religious fervor over issues like abortion. Some would rather destroy our almost 250-year-old republic over the issue, replacing it with a religious, read that Christian, dictatorship, the same kind of religious tyranny that caused many of the first colonists to flee Europe in the first place. Perhaps they forget that there was a time when, even with Christian governments in power, a Catholic ruler slaughtered Protestants. Remember Bloody Mary? And when the Protestants were in charge, they did the same to the Catholics. Those who are familiar with United States history may remember the anti-Catholic riots of the early 19th century, a time that gave birth to Millerism and eventually our own Seventh-day Adventist Church. It was a time when Catholics were believed to be of the devil and not Christian at all. Subversion of the government has the potential to bring horrors like that back again. The church today, as in Isaiah's day, appears to have lost its way. Commanded to passively carry the love of Christ to the world, they instead demand the punishment and even death of sinners at their hands. Much of that religious zealotry was echoed in the repeated cries to hang Mike Pence on January 6. When I asked some Christians how they could even support such a perversion of their faith, they replied that Pence was betraying Donald Trump, and Trump is against abortion, so Christians must be on the right side of that single issue. Of course, Mike Pence opposes abortion also, but that disconnect does not seem to register for some. Religious zealotry caused the priesthood of Christ's day to be blind to his role as Messiah. Perhaps we are facing a similar blindness here. Some Christians are seeing the assault on the Capitol as an apocalyptic or end-time event. Paul wrote prophetically of that time to the church in Thessalonica when he said, "The coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with how Satan works. He will use all sorts of displays of power through signs and wonders that serve the lie, and all the ways that wickedness deceives those who are perishing. They perish because they refuse to love the truth and so be saved. For this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie." 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 9 through 11. Could that delusion deceive even the churches? Jesus said, "For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." Matthew 24:24. If these things will threaten to deceive even the elect, what would be the case for the nominal Christians? Perhaps we see the results in the many prophets who foretold that Donald Trump would be restored to office by Congress on January 6th and urged others to storm Washington, D.C. and make it happen. Some are still calling for the overthrow of the electoral process in their sermons almost a month later. We might ask how this can be and how apparently faithful Christians can be deceived so easily. Perhaps it is because things are not as they appear to be. Writing to the church in Corinth when other Christians opposed his ministry, Paul said, "For such people are false apostles, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising, then, if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve." 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 through 15. Maybe what all of this means is that instead of buying into conspiracies preached from our pulpits and through online ministries and by rabble-rousers, we should seek instead to find truth through a closer relationship to Christ and a deep abiding trust in His ability to deal with the problems of the world. We are commanded to carry the gospel everywhere because that will bring about the only revolutionary change that He exemplified. Once that is universally carried out, the rest could naturally fall into place. Too many self-styled influencers want to speak to our fears, to manipulate us for their agendas and for questionable ends. In response to that, Isaiah says, "Do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear, and do not dread it." Isaiah 8, verse 12. Maybe it is time we turn to the quiet message of the Bible instead of the pundits shouting from the rooftops to relieve our fears. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You can find more commentaries like it and the footnotes for this commentary at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. May God bless you and your family.